Okay.
All right, we'll call the Finance Committee meeting to order. For everybody's information, we have one item added to the agenda. It will be right after number five, and that's Fire Chief thinks he needs to plug some holes in the roof. So we'll talk about that after number five. Is there any public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to the financial audit.
Mr. Chairman, with us tonight is David Early from the firm Westburg Aitions. Westburg Aitions has been the auditing firm for the city for a number of years. David, I believe, is a principal at Westburg Aitions, and so you've had before you the last couple meetings the financial statement. We've talked a little bit about fund balances, a number of other things. I think I've communicated that with David, and I think he's got some of that information included in his presentation, and we'll touch on with that. And with that, I'll turn it over to David Early.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Well, welcome.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. First thing I just want to go over is the governance communication letter. Just a couple things I want to touch on that. As you've probably heard several times, GASB 68, adopted by all governmental units, which refers to all the changes in your financial statements as it relates to your pension plans and so forth. So as far as its impact to the city, you ended up recording about a $5.9 million liability for the pensions. And 5.3 of that was actually like a prior period adjustment, which means it relates to all the prior years before 2015. So it increased approximately $600,000 for 2015. Now that liability every year, it really depends upon how well your pension plan does. You know, if the investments do better, that liability will fluctuate. So overall, the main purpose for doing that was just to kind of show what is your part of that liability for the overall plan. And of course, the more employees you have, the larger liability you end up having. And it also represents that your employees are earning benefits now as they work. Instead of waiting to expense everything as you pay it, now you're saying, well, every year they're basically earning a benefit. And as the plan itself does better, you know, it helps pay some of that. So ultimately, I guess it's not necessarily changing how you're paying your para. You're still going to be paying it whatever percent the plan recommends or requires. It doesn't change that part of it. So. But over time, your financial statements will include different key components, which will kind of help you see, well, how is the plan doing? And since it's the first year, it's kind of hard to judge. You know, next year could be completely different. So, but no matter what, you've started out now with a $5.9 million liability. Just as far as some of the information on the plan, the general employees plan is funded at 78.2%. And the police and fire was at 86.6%. You know, so theoretically, as that goes up, your liability does go down. So,
is that PERA for the general employees and the police? Is that something different than
two separate plans?
Okay.
Yeah, each plan is separate, and so that's why the funding status is a little different. And actually, currently, the state of Minnesota is required to contribute to the police and fire fund so many million dollars per year until it reaches, I believe, the 90% funding. So so they're actually going to continue to help that plan out until it reaches what they would like to see. Any other comments on that? If not, I have to turn to the second page. Under the recommended policy improvements section, just a couple things I wanted to discuss. As far as the budget, you control your budget at the department level, but as a matter of practice, you haven't typically been approving if a department goes over its budget. You haven't necessarily approved that. Now, in total, the general fund has never gone over budget. You've been significantly under budget every year for the last 4 years anyway. So my main recommendation there is to actually just have a process where you're saying that we recognize that this department's going over, you're approving it, You know, it doesn't necessarily require that you amend the budget. That's kind of up to you and determine if you want to ever amend the budget. I know throughout the year you typically do some budget amendments for things that you know are coming up. But what happens is towards after you get past the end of the year, if you've got all the payables and stuff booked, you're not necessarily always going to know whether or not a department's final amount is over budget or not. Comment on that?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, we've talked a little bit about that, and we've kind of changed the philosophy on budgetary amendments as we go out through the years. And some of that was primarily due to the year of 2015. It was an abnormal year with a lot of different departments experiencing difficulties with the staff changeovers and the awarding of doing some things with the city clerk's department, the planning department, when we were short engineers. That had a major impact, especially in 2015, and we've talked about it in this committee that we'll bring budgetary amendments to the committee on a more frequent basis.
I think we talked about quarterly.
Yes.
Yes. I did see that in your previous meetings that you decided that you'd like to do that quarterly, and that would be a very good idea.
Mm-hmm. So would that take care of your concern then,
No, okay. It certainly would. That's one of the better ways as far as keeping up to date on what's occurring. You know, obviously in the first two quarters, you're not likely to see an issue.
Okay.
You know, as you get to the fourth quarter where you really know what will happen. So I think that would be a very good policy change for you then. As far as the fund balance policy, you've gone through the process, you've adopted a policy, which is always a good idea to have. The one thing that I would like to see is actual resolution passed by the council in order to be very specific on this. I mean, some of these things you've been doing for many years, you know, like the charter lays out, you can do up to 10% of your budget for that contingency reserve. You know, you've had reserves for your insurance and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would kind of like to just see an updated resolution just basically saying, this is our specific policy. For instance, insurance, say we want our insurance reserve to always be whatever the deductible is. For the employee things, you've got things like the vacation, the sick time, the insurance buyout, things like that. You know, you could have a resolution saying that you are basically going to fund the entire liability each year, which is essentially what you're doing now. To me, it's more like it's just, this fund balance classification just started, 2012, I think it was. So, I mean, to me, it's just a good way to kind of start over and say this is the intent, and it basically communicates to everyone that this is what your ongoing policy is. Now, you don't have to adopt those resolutions every year unless you're going to make a change in it. So some of those are just basically kind of doing a generic resolution, laying out the terms of what you're doing, and then after year end, getting specific on dollar amounts, which you don't necessarily know all the numbers until right after year end. So
you're saying that for each of the funds?
General fund is what I mainly
general
talking
fund.
About. Because the other funds are basically, when you establish those funds, they're for a specific purpose. And so you've laid that out.
Okay.
This is really just the general fund.
I'd like to see us have that before the end of the year.
Oh, so certainly. We can bring that back at a near future meeting. As a matter of fact, most of those are following the policy, and we can show what sections of the policy is following.
Yeah.
And some of them are example would be Convention and Visitors Bureau, which is outside of the general operating fund, but they have a certain amount set up for cash flow because of differently than the general fund because their cash flow is differently. That's we can have that spelled out. It's in the footnotes. We talked a little bit about it at our last meeting. And so it's just formalizing the policy in that we're following the sections.
Correct. And it's just something that you could review each year if it needs to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. The next handout I'd like to go over is just the graphs. Just a little bit of a summary. This doesn't cover all your funds, but it covers some of the more significant ones.
Thank you.
On page number one, the main reason I like to look at this is just to kind of show how the top three sources of your revenue, are always going to be very consistent. But also, the intergovernmental revenue is typically always going to be a large percentage of your city's general fund budget too. Now, intergovernmental revenue includes state, federal, and county. It's not all just LGA. And over the last few years, it's typically making up about 35% of your general fund revenues. And one thing there is, you know, those are typically monies that are not, it's not at your discretion how much you get, you know. You're just kind of at their mercy. And I look back at the history of your LGA, and in 2015, you received $4.49 million, the most you've received since 2007, because of the past years where they've certified amount, but then they basically took it away. So you know, LGA is one of those things that everyone realizes is basically really fallen behind in terms of keeping up with inflation, if you think of it that way. So just one thing I wanted to point out on that. Any questions? All right, on page two, what I'm showing here is just your general fund and the capital improvement fund, which is typically used to make large purchases of equipment, things like that. As you can see, your general fund basically has been staying around $14 million the last 5 years, and your capital fund actually declined significantly in 2015 due to basically three main departments. You had a major project on the Civic Center, the auditorium, and then Public Works purchased quite a bit of equipment. So from 14 to 15, your fund balance went down from 3.1 to 1.7. Now, of course, most of those were planned expenditures. So, I mean, a decrease in the fund balance doesn't necessarily mean it's a negative thing. You know, if it's something that you planned for, that's really no big issue at all. It's those surprise things that if you end up spending money that you didn't plan on. So, any comments on that one? Page three, what I want to show here is just your total fund balance to what you've been expending each year. And you know, the general trend since 2012 is that your expenditures have been going up and the fund balance has been going down. So I mean, you have been spending down some of those monies. But again, most of those things were planned because, you know, they're part of your capital improvement plan. So that's not necessarily a negative thing that the fund balance does go down. This whole time, though, you are maintaining your policy. You know, you typically want to have 100% of your general fund budget in the fund balance at the end of the year, and you have been maintaining that also. So,
was the local option sales tax in there? Is that what we spent that made this go this direction?
That would not be included in
this. This is just a general
fund.
Yeah. Strictly general fund, yeah.
But that would be an example of other fund balances that were high that have been spent down, and that was all planned to use that money in the industrial parks. That'd be a good example of that.
I just think it's good to look at the general fund and the capital improvement together, because those are basically helping to run the overall city other than your major street improvements and things like that. So, all right. And then the last page is just kind of a snapshot of the waste treatment fund. You know, obviously over the last few years, you've gone through and spent a lot of money on all the major improvements. You had to index the rates over the last few years, and the fund is doing quite well. You look at the operating income, and you are generating more operating income each year. So essentially, your revenue is going up because your rate increases. It's going right to the bottom line because your expenses have pretty much been pretty static the last 3 years. So, and according to the rate study that was conducted, I think 2012, you know, the plan was to get up to 1 year's of operating, or a half year's operating.
6 months. Yep.
And a full year's of debt service. Have that amount of cash and investments available at year end, and that was. The expectation was about $6.5 million. You ended 2015 with $8.7 million. With some of that, I know, being allocated to future improvements. So,
yeah.
So you are at least are on pace to where you want to be, or where it was projected to be, to accumulate the resources in that fund that you really need as a backup.
Does that tell me that our rates are too high, potentially? I mean, if we've kind of reached where we want to be, and it continues to go up.
The rates were set through 2017, mm-hmm. And as David mentioned, they were set to have 6 months of operating and one full year of debt service. Also in there, and it, this graph really doesn't reflect it, is what's going back into the system for capital improvements,
okay.
for improvements that David mentioned, and,
yep.
and the lift stations are a large part of that,
sure.
which we're in the midst of. So in 17, we would probably be looking at the rates again to know just that. But I think this indicates that it is on track for what the rate study indicated.
Correct.
And yep. so it would be dependent upon the level of improvements or capital improvements that would need to be funded.
And I believe the rate study was assuming that you'd have like $5.5 million in debt service payments, and you're not there yet.
Right, yeah, there's some financing that, not only for the lift stations, but I believe there's a balloon in the out years, and I don't exactly remember when that balloon. There's a 0% interest loan out there.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
So, all right. So yeah, essentially that's what I would say is that you are on pace where you need to be at this point, so. You know, as far as the financial statements themselves, there are just a couple statements that I'd like to just kind of briefly go over. If you can go to page 18 and 19.
David, they do not have an actual book.
Oh, okay.
But it's in here.
The electronic version that we gave them is through the footnotes. We didn't give them any of the information after the footnotes, which is the
detail. This is one before footnotes. So
okay.
the statement of revenues and expenditures for the governmental funds. Which is essentially your operating statement for all funds except for the waste treatment.
Mm-hmm. I'll get a page here.
I'm really trying to get
18.
To there, too.
It's page 18.
It is on page 18?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
While we're looking that up, I don't think you can answer the question, but is it, you know, when we look at our property tax revenue as a percent of a resource or revenue,
mm-hmm.
is 29.2 in that 20 high 20s? Is that a normal rate in your experience for seeing that?
It really is determined based on how much the LGA is.
I'm at 13.
Because, you know, if you're more reliant 13? On LGA,
no, on page 13,
so
right.
Page
18, you said in
19? 18.
In some cases, where the property taxes are actually greater than the LGA. So it really depends upon
it starts on page 40.
How you're able to fund your city.
4.
Right?
You
44.
Know,
okay.
You know, if you're not doing much, if you don't have much LGA, you know,
right.
if you're not able to do a lot of special assessments, that really impacts
That's
it
all
also.
The property tax, yeah, sure.
44 of 137.
Yeah, I'm
not a bad position to be in
that
you're receiving more LGA than
yeah.
you're having to
oh, sure.
tax.
Statement of revenues, expenditures,
yeah.
and changes in fund
balance. Okay. For
it's page 44
it's page 44
of the electronic, electronic version.
Oh. Okay. I got it. You there? Okay. The main line on this one, if you go down to the line that says net change in fund balances, the positive number means that the revenue is greater than the expenses. Negative means that you've spent more than you took in. And overall, you know, the general fund, $63,000 positive. And I know your budget, you had actually expected to spend, have a negative of $500,000. So, I mean,
mm-hmm.
You were well within what your budgeted amount was. And you know, again, like I said, some of these are showing negative changes, but sometimes it's just fine because it's all a matter of timing. Like in your capital projects, your street projects, some of that money you had in the previous year, you spent it this year. So those things, like I said, aren't necessarily bad. So like the street projects there, $1.1 million negative, just means that you completed more projects, but it's not necessarily a bad thing that it went negative at the time, because the timing is never going to be the same within the same year, because they typically go across years. So in grand total, if you look at the total governmental funds, the fund balance decreased by $2.1 million overall. And again, this doesn't include anything with the waste treatment.
Yeah, And if I could just point out, the two major factors there are the debt service, which is when we're spending down and paying off the debt, and the other one is under the street and water capital projects, which is part of the industrial park, which was a spend on local option sales tax that you had mentioned earlier, Dennis. Those two alone total about $1.5 million.
In the column that says other governmental funds, that's the one that actually includes your capital improvement fund.
Okay.
So the capital improvement fund accounted for over $1 million of that decrease. So. But, you know, in terms of the positive thing, you know, many years ago you established that community investment fund, and, you know, that's turned out well for you in terms of helping you finance some of these projects. So at the end of the year, you had $8.9 million in the community investment. So,
and that was an increase of,
and that actually
I don't
increased,
remember the
yeah.
number, but it was an yeah. increase.
And if I could, the way the community investment fund works is it is the city's funding source for its 10-year street replacement program. When we do sell a bond for a street replacement program, any excess bond proceeds goes back from the construction fund, goes back into the debt service fund. But when the debt service fund is paid off, if there's any extra dollars there, that goes into the community investment fund as part of the funding source for the entire program. So.
Yep. Okay. Any comments or questions on that? Mm-hmm. And then just have you turn about 3-4 pages to the statement of revenues for the waste treatment plant.
It's titled proprietary funds.
The proprietary funds.
Oh,
here,
okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So the operating statement for that fund, the change in net position, which I know it's different terminology, but it's kind of the same thing. A positive number means that the revenue was greater than the expenses. So change in net position was $1.8 million for your waste treatment, which is a nice turnaround from where you were. And it actually, at that level, it helps you accumulate those resources that you're trying to save. The prior period adjustment line that says negative $514,000, that was a result of adopting the pension. And so that was reducing your net position just because of adopting that pension standard that was required.
So. Yeah, I want to make sure I understand this.
Sure.
GASB thing. Yeah. That's an obligation and it goes as a liability. Do we ever pay it?
You are technically helping fund it as you make contributions. Essentially it is a liability that you fund over time. And how much you have to fund it really, like I said, determines how well the individual plans do. You know, if the investment returns are good, contributions are where they need to be, you know, you're not going to expect that you can see that liability actually decrease at some point. But part of it is, like I said, you know, everyone that's participating in this plan, you know, it's guaranteed benefits. You know, the plan doesn't do well, everyone that participates has to help make up shortfalls. And so that's why the adoption of this was basically just show what your potential liability could be.
It's a but we have a yep. pension liability PERA fund or account. Right, that we talked about both regular and police and fire.
Annually we send in the city's contribution too.
So I mean, this is a pie in the sky thing. If that fund falls apart or doesn't do well, we may have to send them a portion of
that would be our liability.
That'd be our maximum liability.
Yeah. Right, and like I said, that actually includes people that are earning benefits that are not receiving it yet. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a net present value of when they're starting to pay amount in the future.
Gotcha.
And so it's really dependent upon, like I said, how well that fund does. You know, ideally it would be 100% funded.
And you wouldn't
end up with that liability. Other than you would recognize that you have an expense that employees are earning. So, but.
And some of their assumptions are a little unrealistic. I don't remember what they think they're going to make on their investments. Is it 7.5% or 8.5% or something?
Yeah, and that is one of the issues that makes it difficult to actually come up with that number, because it's really driven off of that discount rate. You know, if that discount rate, the actual discount rate ends up being lower, your liabilities shift really quick.
Right.
So, okay. I mean, it's very sensitive, because just the amount of money that's involved, the number of pensions that have to be paid out of there. So in the first year, you really don't know where it's going. But, you know, typically Minnesota has been in a very good position as far as funding their pension plans. There's been some states where they've actually had to borrow money to make their contributions. And so overall, yes, they're in good shape. Are there always risks? Absolutely.
Okay.
A lot of unknowns on it, and only time will kind of tell where it's at. All right, if there's anything else that you might have questions on. I know you had a lot of discussion on the fund balance itself, and I thought that was a very good discussion you had. And the main takeaway, I guess, is the fact that it is set by your policies that you adopt. There is no magic number that it needs to be. It really comes down to somewhat of a comfort level. I mean, obviously there are some cities that probably operate at 75% of the fund balance, and they're fine with that, where you are typically at 100%. So, I mean, there's a lot of judgment in that as far as how you want to do that. I mean, it truly isn't necessary to commit every part of that fund balance either. I mean, you wouldn't have to. It's mainly a way to commit and document that you are going to use this money for specific items. It's not required that they all have to be committed.
So. I think that's a problem we have explaining that to the public. I mean, they see we've got this huge number of dollars out there. Well, yes, we do. But they're all committed, or, you know, spoken for, so to speak, in layman's terms. We don't have much that we can just actually say, I want to use this money for whatever we want to use it for. We're pretty much tied up with those funds. And that's what the public doesn't understand.
Right. I mean, that's where the judgment comes in, though. If you're willing to operate with less of a reserve,
mm-hmm.
That's obviously just a decision that you'd make.
Right.
You know, strictly dollars, you know, it's like I said, it's not required to cover 100% of next year's budget. It depends upon what level of comfort are you at, where do you want it to be. You know, like I said, you could operate at 75% and you'd be just fine.
Let me ask you, when you look at ours, mm-hmm. do you see any of ours that seem abnormally large for a city of this size?
Well,
that, you know, that we could or should take a look at. Steve and I have talked about a couple of them, but
I look at the 10% that you're basically booking, the 1.3, you're booking 2 years' budgets basically, and whether or not you would actually need to have that amount. So you got 2.6 million that you're just setting aside for an emergency that you don't know what could happen. This is basically, you're just saying we want this set aside for something that we don't know what's going to happen in the future, mm-hmm. something unexpected. And so obviously, you've been at that level for many years. Have you ever had to dip down and actually spend down the fund balance? Not necessarily.
No, I don't think we have.
Now, of course, if you followed the budget to a T, you'd have spent down a couple million of that by now, because, you know, annually your budgets the last few years have been about 500,000 negative planned spending, and that didn't occur. So I mean, that's,
and that 500,000, so that I understand, that really made up for that with using local option sales tax funds, is that?
Yeah, the comment I would kind of allude to that is that in 2008 through 2010 or 12, whenever the unallotments were happening, mm-hmm. the council chose, rather than to follow the budget and pay for those capital improvements, they deferred the capital improvements, which is kind of where the discussion has been about deferred maintenance and deferred capital costs and those types of things. So the spend down of the reserves would have been able to fulfill the budgets and buy those capital items, and then the discussion that we've talked about when, do you replenish it, or how do you handle those, gives that option of 2 years. And those are reserves that we have discussions during budget processes with the mayors, and so those are reserves that we're looking at. Is that the right levels or not?
Right. And that's you can make your own judgments on that and decide as a council how you want to operate, you know. It's flexible, put it that way.
Yep.
And it actually, you know, spending down fund balances is kind of like a one-time deal, though.
That's right.
You know, it's not new money.
That's
you
right.
Know? And there it goes back to whether or not you'd have to replenish it. Well, then how do you replenish it? So
It may
it's
be
kind of a two-edged sword.
Yeah, and it may be a funding mechanism on where if there's additional revenues in the next 2 to 5 years for planning purposes and you want to get to a certain level, be it property taxes or whatever, you may use some of those reserves and replace it with the revenues in those future years as a funding mechanism.
Okay.
Anything else?
Does committee have any questions? I've got a few.
I
want to go back, and early in the discussion, and you talk about the basis of a qualified opinion, and it's for us it was on page 12.
Yep.
And what that really means, because you had some, I'm
yep.
not sure, some concern about some internal controls, if I remember correctly.
The statements, essentially, we issue an opinion on different parts of the statements. So the first two statements that you come to are basically get one opinion. The next few statements get their own opinion. So as far as the qualified opinion, the governmental activities, we put a qualified opinion on there because of the OPEB things. It has not been fully adopted. The city has had an actuary do the test and determine what the liabilities should be on that. And it's kind of right at the level where you're kind of saying, well, is it material or is it not material? But over time, this OPEB liability does grow. The utilities, for instance, finally adopted all the GASB 45 stuff for 2015. They felt that it reached the level where you needed to start disclosing it just because it was significant. And so that's why, and that, like I said, that only affects that very first statement. So then after that, we're saying that all the other funds, we're
okay.
saying is an unqualified opinion on all those.
All right.
So.
Then on what would be page, let me see here, for us, page 14, that's where the internal control over financial reporting.
Yes, it relates to that issue there. And that... it is an internal control issue because it impacts what gets put into the statements and whether or not all the information
okay.
was there. And like I said, it's been kind of partially implemented, but to do the full amount, there requires a few more pages of disclosures, for instance.
Right.
So, and it's something that I understand that we should be able to actually proceed with and have part of the 2016. Because there's another GASB change that's going to impact you too in 2016 that basically relates to tax abatements. I know you've done a few tax abatements. And so that's going to, what they want you to do is disclose the details of those tax abatements now. They're going to be part of your financial statements. So
okay.
So that's another change that's just kind of, they know that's a common practice. And so the idea is that get a handle on how much are you doing tax abatements, because it does impact your revenue. You know, your property tax, you're forgiving this. And so so it's basically a way to kind of gauge, well, how much activity is out there, how much revenue are you foregoing to assist with this project for the tax abatement purpose anyway.
Okay.
So it's strictly more disclosure. It's always an effort to kind of create more transparency on how cities operate, too.
Okay. Anyone else?
Who's going to look at that then? The State Commerce Department or who?
It's primarily people who buy your bonds. I mean, that's an important thing to them. I mean, the biggest users of your financial statements are who's ever buying the bonds. The state of Minnesota obviously gets a copy. Whether or not they actually would analyze it for that purpose, I don't know.
There's more employees than down at the state.
Okay. Well, good. Thank you for the for all the work that you do.
Thank you so much.
It's a very interesting report, and I mean, wow, to try to read it and understand it is takes a lot.
Yeah, not everyone could be expected to be an expert on it at all.
Yeah.
And that's why you have all these other policies in place to monitor how things operate and just how you run the city.
I think the concern that we have or should have is, you know, from a fiduciary standpoint, are we doing everything that we should be doing to make sure that there's no funny business going on?
Right.
One of the items that we divulge to any auditing firm that comes in is any kind of changes in internal control. And as you all know, we'll be divulging that at the next audit on the changes of duties for the treasurer's duties. And we have to work through those yet. And as we discussed, we'll be bringing them back before this committee to make sure that those internal controls are in place for that exact reason.
Okay.
Well, I look at policy, and that's my piece. And, you know, we talked about these recommended policies before, and I'm just kind of looking at these again, getting some thoughts here. We didn't really answer that budget management question. We said that, you know, we put the idea that we're going to check this quarterly. That still doesn't get to the crux of what this policy is asking us to do, which is to exceed at the end. Granted, there'd be less likely for that to happen, but it would still happen. My question would be, is the problem that if that happens in the fourth quarter and it goes over, what's our issue with that? I mean, that's a bad thing, obviously, but is the problem we don't have a mechanism to allow that to happen?
To formally acknowledge that it happened and basically approve it, you know.
Okay.
In terms of, you know, because, you know, your budget overall is set that, you know, if you were to actually violate the total budget, for instance, that goes against the policies.
Right.
You know, you're not supposed to spend more than you're bringing in according to the budget. You know? And so in this case, it's not clear in your charter in terms of what to do if a department changes, but the council has to approve if you move money from one department to another. And so my whole thought on that is that you should also have to approve if a department will exceed its budget, too. It kind of goes hand in hand. And as far as you looking at it quarterly, my assumption is that that'll give you an opportunity to make corrections. Or do something on that.
We but certainly do, but I'm still seeing a possibility will still exist that we will still overshoot those budgets, and then what's the process, and what do we do? To authorize that, when you say to authorize it and to exceed it, I know that I'm just thinking that might be not very comfortable for certain folks to allow these expenditures to go over what they said they were going to do. So I'm trying to envision what kind of a discussion we're going to have here about that. Have you seen policies that basically put some kind of a authorization to a percent over?
That's what I was going to say, is that you could have a policy in terms of a percentage that you could not exceed. I mean, you already have purchase policies in place in terms of who can purchase what at what dollar threshold, so it's kind of the same thing.
Okay.
And so I really think if you're looking at the budget every quarter, after you get done with the third quarter, I think you still will have a very good idea. I mean, most of your large expenditures that are part of the capital improvements, you already know about that.
Mm-hmm.
So through the general fund, most of those should be expected, I would guess.
Two things that in the last quarter we can even, I mean, do more of a monthly to as we get closer. But one of the projections that we look at is the personnel cost. Personnel costs for the city budget is like 85%, or it's a large percentage. So those are budgeted according to collective bargaining agreements and personnel and policies. And so those are more than not going to be spent at 100%. Unless there's some staffing changes or shifts throughout the year, and that we should know. And so the communication with the departments on where they're at, they get monthly reports And so the city administrator's office has that communication. So from the third quarter on, they're kind of monitored pretty closely.
I understand that. I just think that if we were going with this recommendation, we probably would have to explore something a little different. And I don't have it in front of me, but the committed balances that we have, about how many of those do we have in the general fund? We have these committed pieces, you know, where we would want to look at policies for those.
Yep. They're on page, I think, 71
okay.
of the electronic version in your yep. handout that we talked about last week or two yep. weeks ago as well. But that's the start of those and spells them all out as the committed amounts and what they're for.
Yeah, and in terms of the number of resolutions you could do, I mean, anything that involves the employee with the mm-hmm. insurance buyout, like you said, the vacation, sick time, I mean, that's all one resolution. That's kind of all
yeah.
part of the same policy.
Yeah.
So you would yeah. not need a separate one for each one of those. You know, and then like the current year emergency, the $1.3 million, you know, you could always have one resolution
yeah.
on what threshold you want to use, percentage, dollar-wise.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we're good.
Right.
Thanks
Thank
again.
You.
We appreciate
the questions.
It. Yep.
Thank
All
you,
right.
dude.
We'll go to the ACH banking changes.
Mr. Chairman, this is in your packet strictly for information only. It's some new banking agreements that we received from Heritage Bank, again, with some of the changing of treasury duties and those. I threw it in the packet for information only. We've talked about more electronic. We're doing that now with payroll already, but as credit cards and more electronics, we've set some procedures up to handle these items, and it was in your packet for information only.
Anybody have any questions, concerns? Okay. Oslo Heights. That would be Kevin.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you have before you in paper form a map of Oslo Heights lots that were sold. There are six lots. The dollar amount taken in is not totaling the special assessments that were on the lot. Subsequent to the Polly Rickstead and Bob Bonowitz discussion of another lot, I think the council was committed to staying with the practice of getting all the money on the special assessments placed against the lot, treating everybody on an equal playing field. Having that said, the two in the middle were bought outright. The other four is a new little twist to us. It's a contract for deed with the county. Judy Thompson, that is, thinks there was a contract for deed before, but it was high enough to pay the city off in full. So here we have a process where the county paid us roughly the $7,400 for the paid, and the other two gave us zero. They have a five-year plan of contract for deed, 20% a year, giving us, by their policy, nothing until the final thing is paid. So we have two options here, and this is the staff option, that the owners know they bought it now. You hold a hearing and you assess them the extra $2,600. And it's based on the premise that someday the county will give us 100% of what they say is the sale price without any flaw to the system. Should there be a flaw to the system, the math is going to be all screwed up. The other option is to wait till the contract for deed is all paid in full. Some year we'd get that in a settlement. Maybe a little higher propensity to lose it in the process. And then it's kind of like, well, now we're going to give them a $2,600 special assessment for four years after they initially bought it. That's a little larger of a time. But our recommendation here is to set six hearings and assess the full amount that we didn't get, which is the last 2 years of the special assessment from the foreclosure. And hope someday we get the 100% from the county that the math is based on.
Well.
Yeah, contract for deed changes things.
Have they ever sold any lots before in contract for deed?
We think sometimes before, but the price was higher, so we got it all. You know, I mean, it just, we weren't dealing with special assessments on them.
And the people didn't think they had to pay special assessment?
Well, when people call me now, I say, depending on the price the county gives us, we subtract it from that, and if there's any balance due, we're gonna reassess it. And I never know. I mean, some of these, there's different prices, and some of it's a little bit of some of a tax, there's some other specials on it from some other agencies, so it's what they give us in the settlement is what we deal with. And so when it comes up short, I'm not sure if these people call, because people call them, don't give me their name, whether these three buyers called, and I know only one that I recall called and asked the question. So will there be surprises for the others? The county always says, check with your city to see if there's any additional assessments. Some do, some don't. By our policy, if we don't hear any real objections, you can't exceed 5 years, the second go-around. You don't start another 10. You do 5 years at the stated interest rate of that project, which is 5.5. So that's another policy, John, that we follow. So Paul, we got interest rate of 13.1 down to like 4.2. They always take the project that it was done on. Doesn't matter who leaves it, seniors, disabled, veterans, whatever is out there, mm-hmm. We stay with that interest rate.
So they would have 5 years to pay it, is that?
5 years, yeah. Pay 2,600 with interest. So.
Well, the number is 2,600, because these all say 2,325.
The last number goes to
2,325
plus the interest as it's going.
Yep.
So you could say seven, so you could say 600 a year. Easily.
I make a motion to set a public hearing for September 19th to reassess streets.
Your second?
Second.
Discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? That passes. September 19th. One of your final duties, Kevin.
I guess. We don't have a clerk on board, so I don't know what's going on, but life goes on.
Okay. All right. Chief Hansen, would you like to tell us about your roof leaks?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, before you, on late notice, and I apologize for that, is a request to replace the roof on the fire station. As you'll see in your packet, there are two quotes for that. Roof one out of Freeport is the low quote of $60,177. Of that amount, $48,500 is approved in 2016 CIP budget, with the additional $11,677 to be taken from the fire department's operation budget for building maintenance. Both quotes are for 60 mil roofing with a 20-year warranty on them.
Question, the 11,677 that you're going to take out of building maintenance, what happens? What aren't you going to do, or?
We're going to hope and pray that nothing happens to the building for the rest of the year. I think we're sitting really good. We've only, knock on wood, we've only spent about $500 this year on any building maintenance. We've done very well this year, so this would be the year to take this money out. We still have a little bit left there, so if something does happen, we will still have some money there.
Doors were replaced, was that this year, or was that under a different?
All the doors were replaced last year.
That was last year?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Committee?
You don't want to buy any more buckets?
No. If we can help it, that would be.
Move to approve.
Second.
Sean.
When these kind of projects happen, and this is just a new guy question, the quotes that they get, is that on the entity to come up with these price quotes before they bring them here? I see, you know, there's two quotes that you have here. Is that what we customarily do, is make them seek out quotes and bring them, and then they select their lowest bid or which one they want to go with? Is that normal? Okay.
You want to explain how this came about?
Well, basically what happened is the $48,500 that was put in for CIP was the previous administration. I don't know how they got that number. Then we went out for quotes to these two companies, and they actually came back with a different material, like $90,000. So what we did is, in the CIP for next year, we added an extra $50,000 in there to cover the cost. Then we went back and we kind of looked and said, you know, we don't need the elite material. If you give us a 20-year warranty on this, they dropped it down basically to $60,000. And this way, by doing this like this, we save $50,000. We'll remove that $50,000 from CIP for next year.
That elite material, how long was that? Is the warranty on that?
The interesting thing is they would only give us a 15-year warranty on that.
All right.
And only one company would do it, the other company wouldn't touch it. So.
But that warranty is only good if they're still in business.
Yes.
Yep. That's a good point. Tim.
Of course, this is, we're making reference to this money being in the CIP, which we don't have all the dollars for, all of the items in the CIP. We know that also. So then this gets moved to the top of the list, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's fine. I just want to make sure that
there is a way to get more money for the fire department. It's the charge for fire calls. Because everyone's homeowner's policy will pay at least $500, if not $1,000. So I'm just letting you know that.
That's not a friendly amendment to the motion.
No.
Yeah, thanks.
No, I wouldn't dare do that.
That's not the first time we've talked about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think the council was interested in it, but staff really objected, especially the fire department people.
That I can't answer that. That was prior.
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
They were for it, but they wouldn't publicly come out and say it.
So. Well, that's something.
But I mean, that's in everyone's homeowner's policy and renter's policy. So.
Okay, to this point, any other questions on the roof? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That passes.
Thank you, sir.
Do we have anything else?
I have nothing, no miscellaneous, Mr. Chairman.
I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
We're adjourned. Thank you.
Did
you
have
something?
No, I thought you were saying something to me.
No, I'm looking at the clock.
I can't read lips that well.